Audi.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Big Travel Podcast. I'm Lisa Francesca Nand. After a series of tragic losses, Mary Ellen Ward took a giant leap of faith and headed to India. Her plan to be there 6 months has now seen her there for almost 18 years, setting up the inspirational travel site Breathe Dream Go and also tour company India for Beginners. We explore the alternative music scene in Canada, her year with a film director in Tokyo, the healing power of a warm breeze on a dangerously open-doored train through the golden light of the Indian countryside, and also how, when your inner voice tells you to travel somewhere, you really should go. Mary Ellen Ward is on the Big Travel Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I am currently speaking to you from the south coast of Spain, from Malaga. Where are you?
I'm in Rishikesh, India. So this is the northern India.
What's it like? Describe the scene to me.
Well, it's kind of raining, sort of, because now we have monsoon season. So the rain can come and go, but it can be very, very heavy. And Rishikesh is in the lower foothills of the Himalayas. So it's actually right at the very beginning. Like, it's literally from my rooftop, I can see the actual very beginning of the foothills. Like, we're literally the very first hills that start to rise up and become the Himalayas.
That sounds fantastic. Are you, what sort of place have you got there?
I'm in a society, what's called a society. So I rent a flat in a proper residential, a gated society. It's almost one of the only ones in Rishikesh because this is a pretty small town. It's a really nice place, actually. It's more of a high-end place, unlike most of Rishikesh, which is pretty basic. It's a pretty simple town. It's long been known as a pilgrimage center. It's a sacred city, and it's called the yoga capital of the world.
I want to ask you how you got there, which makes me want to start from the beginning, talking about your story, which is, I've just been reading about, and it's incredibly emotive and sad and tragic and wonderful and everything at the same time. Why don't we start with what you currently do? I think that's a good place to start, and then we'll go back in time.
Well, what I'm currently doing, what I've been doing actually since I first came to India in 2005, is I am a travel blogger, and I have always been I have a degree in journalism, so I've always been a writer. I've always been in communications. But when I came to India, I was so inspired. I became a travel writer. I started a travel blog, and that's one of the main things that I do. And then because I was online all the time and so many people, especially women, were asking me advice on coming to India, that it just seemed to make sense that I start my own custom tour company. So I started this company 4 years ago called India for Beginners. And we really do aim at, people who haven't been to India before, because it's a very challenging travel destination for newcomers.
It is, absolutely. It's not always easy, I find, traveling in India.
No, it's not easy, especially at first, because, everything is overwhelming. You have culture shock, your sensory overload, everything is different, everything's confusing. And to have somebody just kind of hold your hand and help you and book things for you and be there for you and answer questions and get you out of any potential jams that you get in. I mean, it's a priceless service, really.
So you also have Breathe, Dream, Go, your travel site.
Yeah, so that's my travel blog. When I started traveling in India in 2005, I started blogging, but this was actually before travel blogging really started. So I just, there wasn't really any travel blogs back then. And I just started on a shared site. And then, you know, the scene started to evolve. And in 2009, that's when I started publishing Breathe, Dream, Go. And that's a travel blog and a website. And I focus mostly on my home country of Canada, India, and South Asia, but mostly India. Most of my posts are about India, because India is a place where people do need that extra help, extra tips, extra advice. And so I have literally hundreds and hundreds of blog posts about travel in India. And I hope that it's helpful to people and inspiring. I try to be inspiring.
It is incredibly inspiring. I've been having a look, and you know, even the title Breathe, Dream, Go speaks of travel and the healing process that travel can be. So we better talk about how you got to this point. What took you to India, and what were you doing before?
So I'm a, like I said, a writer, a communications professional from Toronto, Canada, and I was, you know, working there. And unfortunately, I had a period in my life when I had a lot of rather tragic and devastating personal losses. And I've seen this happen in other people's lives too. It seems like everything happens at once sometimes. I'm certainly not the only person I just felt like I had one loss after another over the course of a few short years. And I was just completely done in, you know, by the end of it. I was depressed. I was grieving. And really looking for a way to get out of my depression and restart my life. I felt like I'd lost so many people and so much had left my life. And I was just casting around for, you know, some way to get out of this big rut I was in. And so one thing I did was I'd always wanted to do yoga teacher training. I had been studying yoga for a long time. And I finally said, okay, well, if I'm not going to start, you know, following my dreams now, When will I? I was already in my 40s and both my parents had recently died. And it just seemed to make sense to me. It was time to go after my dreams. So the first dream was to become a yoga teacher. And I was the oldest person and I was the most inflexible person in the group. But I was also one of the first three people to graduate from that course. So I became a certified yoga teacher in Toronto. And while I was doing that course, this is a hard thing to explain, but it's a long story, but suffice to say, I suddenly became quite obsessed with India, and I had sort of a compulsion to go to India. I had a teacher from India who had a strong impact on me, and I felt this kind of compulsion to go to India. It was more than just a simple decision. I felt compelled to go. And this was, you know, this is one of those few times in our lives when an inner voice speaks very, very loudly. And it can happen to us at any time in our life. But my own experience is that when an inner voice speaks that loudly, you should listen and you should go. And even though I was nervous, I'd never done anything like this before, I decided I was going to heed this voice. And I spent 11 months planning, saving, packing. And in early December 2005, I got on that plane and I flew to India, and I had a return ticket, air ticket dated 6 months later. And I really had no idea what was going to happen during those 6 months. This was the classic leaping off the cliff situation.
Do you remember that first introduction to India? Because it can be, you know, it's a feast of the senses, but it's also, even as a grown adult, it's quite scary. You know, it's quite scary and intimidating to be leaving your whole life behind like that and starting something completely new.
Oh yeah, and this is why so many people don't do it. You know, so many people dream about, you know, they want to follow their dreams, but when push comes to shove, you know, I think the minority is the one, you know, it's a very small number, I would say, who actually, you know, get on the plane. I almost didn't get on the plane, by the way, because I got a bronchial infection, some kind of bronchitis just before leaving. And I almost didn't get on the plane as well. But I'm so glad that I did. And yes, I was very nervous. And I'll never forget that flying into Delhi in the middle of the night and not knowing what was going to happen. That's a kind of a peak experience you don't have very often in your life, just a couple of times where you just put yourself so far out of your comfort zone that you just feel like you're flying, you know, you're flying on a wing and a prayer. And, but I had a lucky break. A friend of a friend arranged for me to get picked up at the airport, and he drove me back. I had met him many years before in Canada, and we had a mutual friend, and he drove me back to his family home. In India, you know, the families live in these extended homes. So he was there with his parents, his brother's family, the kids, his brother's kids, and of course, several servants. And so I went back to this home in a very nice area in South Delhi, and that was my soft landing. I got a very lucky break. I had a very soft landing.
Even when you arrive in India at the airport, though, and many other countries as well, but India has something, you know, special and wild and crazy where suddenly you're, you know, you're thrown into it, aren't you? People are trying to grab your bags and take you off somewhere. Yes. And suddenly it's like, oh, I remember the first time I landed, and my dad's Indian origin. He was born in Fiji, but he's 100% Indian blood. So my family come from India. And the very first time I landed, I thought, well, people, you know, sort of know that. I landed and a baggage handler went to me, Indian girl, and pointed at me, and you know, from then on I thought, oh god, this is going to be crazy, you know. And it is crazy.
Yes, it is crazy. It's true, absolutely.
Was there ever a time you sort of felt out your depth, you know?
I think the whole thing, I was out of my depth. You know, I think that's you know, I had my first experience in India was 6 months traveling around, and it was a peak. The whole thing was a peak experience, the entire thing. I was so far out of my zone, you know. I had an amazing experience. There was ups and downs, but to be honest with you, I didn't have a lot of bad experiences. I think I got very lucky. I had an amazing time. Even though I know there were times when, you know, like I got Delhi belly, or I, you know, something happened, you know, something negative, difficult happened. But overall, I now, when I look back on it, I honestly think of it as a magic carpet ride. I was so inspired by India. I was on such an adventure. I was Alice in Wonderland, and I'd gone through the, you know, the looking glass and down the rabbit hole. And I was just, as a creative person, you know, I lit up like a Christmas tree. You know what? I was like, I was so inspired by India. That's when I began travel writing. I never did any creative writing or personal writing before. I was a professional writer, but I never wrote anything from my heart before I went to India. India is my muse, my creative muse. And so I just found the whole thing tremendously inspiring, especially, you know, I was now in my early 40s, mid 40s. And this experience of traveling for 6 months, it cured me of my depression. It gave me a new start in life. You know, I discovered I had an affinity with India. So India has become a second home. Well, now India is my primary home at the moment, but I discovered a whole new world by pushing myself so far out of my comfort zone. You know, it's like you throw yourself off the cliff in the hopes that a parachute appears. And this is incredibly empowering experience. Like it emboldens you, and it gives you a lot of inner strength. And sure enough, the parachute appeared. I didn't hit the ground, you know. And then after some time, it took me a while to process, but I realized that the parachute was me, that I'm the one who saved my life and made sure I was okay and made the right decisions and had the strength and the courage and the wherewithal to be able to navigate this crazy situation. And that is priceless. That is like incredible amount of inner strength that you get when you do something like this.
Realizing that the parachute is you is absolutely wonderful. And, you know, when you talked about wanting to study something more, a softer, more, you know, religion and mythology, and but going into, you know, something more practical like journalism, you know, you also speak about childhood trauma and being rootless and passionless back in those days, which is an interesting way of expressing it.
Well, I'm really glad you picked up on the name of my site, Breathe, Dream, Go, because that there's a story behind that. And it was when I was at a very despondent about my future as a writer. And I was at a writers and publishers and authors conference, and everybody was saying that, you know, that all the, you know, the industry was drying up. This was at the onset of the, this was 2009, when the internet was just starting to really take over in a big way, but nobody had figured out how to make money. And people were very despondent about the future of publishing and writing and everything else. And I was too, by going to this conference. It really was a bummer, you know? And on the last day of the conference, I actually didn't want to go back. I was so bummed out. And I went in the shower that morning, and I was standing in the shower, and all of a sudden I got this epiphany. It's my only work-related epiphany. And I thought, why don't I take my career online? If everything's going online, why don't I just take my career online and make a name for myself online? And then I honestly tell you that out of nowhere, these words, breathe, dream, go, dropped in my mind. Like, I didn't think of it. I don't know how to explain it. It was like somebody dropped them in my mind. Breathe, dream, go. And then I started thinking about it, and I thought, this is the perfect name for my site, because it's like a mantra, and it's also exactly mirrors my own journey. Now, I started doing yoga to get out of my depression. That's the breathing part. Then I got in touch with my dreams, and my dream was to become a yoga teacher and go to India, and then go, that's the travel part. I actually went, breathe, dream, go. And so I jumped out of the shower. I was sopping wet. I ran to the computer, you know, and opened the computer to search and see if Breathe Dream Go was available. And it was. It wasn't in use at all. And before I was dry, I bought the domain name.
I love that. I absolutely love that, how those work epiphanies can, well, even life epiphanies often happen in the shower. That was the beginning of the opening of your parachute. You were putting the backpack on, I feel, at that point. Take me back a little bit further, because you talk on Breathe Dream Go about the time in your 20s when you were part of an alternative music scene, and actually bringing it back to travel. It sounds like you traveled a lot during that time, playing with people like Duran Duran and the Psychedelic Furs. That sounds fantastic.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not a musician. I was just going to see these bands. And my travel back then was pretty much restricted to New York City and London, I would say. I didn't really travel that much, to be honest. But yeah, I have had my experience back in the day of following rock bands a little bit here and there. I did work in the film industry for a few years in public relations. And that was also a, you know, a fun experience while it lasted.
And moving to Tokyo, I do believe, at that point.
Oh, wow. You really did your homework. Yeah. So I had the opportunity to move to Tokyo for a year with my boyfriend at the time, who got a job there. And I never thought, because I didn't have a lot of self-confidence when I was younger. And as you mentioned earlier, yeah, I was really out of touch with who I was and what I wanted. And I didn't really think I had the right to dream and, you know, create the life I wanted. Nothing like that. I was just kind of going along with the flow. And I never thought I would ever get to Asia. I always wanted to go to Asia since childhood, but I never thought that in my life I would ever get the chance to go to Asia. So that was quite amazing that I was able to live in Japan for a year. It wasn't one of the countries that I felt very compelled to go to, unlike India, but still it was an amazing experience. And I every day was an adventure. And that's kind of when I began to discover how much I loved adventure and being an expat and being in Asia. That's maybe a lot of seeds were planted on that trip, actually.
Tell me what sticks out. Are there any stories that stick out from that time in Tokyo?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a long time ago. But I was just in a very lucky position where my partner was supporting me, and I was able to get up in the morning and just, you know, plan an adventure. Okay, today I'm going to get on the subway system and I'm going to go to this far-flung station and get off and see what happens. You know, it was like kind of like that. Or today I'm going to go and I'm going to find, you know, a conveyor sushi belt restaurant in Shinjuku. Or, you know, like I had this wonderful experience of being able to just wander around this unbelievable city that was like from a different planet. Yeah, I think that what's left with me was just what an adventure it was, how exciting, how different everything was, and how kind of difficult it was for me to understand. Like, why would the automatic money machine, why did they close at the same time as the banks? See, that didn't make any sense to me. What's the point of having an ATM, you know, that closes at the same time as the bank, for example?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. We in Tokyo, I mean, I haven't actually been to Japan. I'd love to go to Japan, but I do hear that it's incredibly different to anywhere that many of us have been to.
Yes. For Westerners, I've heard that Japan is the most different place, that it operates in such a different way. And I was there in the 90s, but even in the 90s, Japan was, or Tokyo anyway, was way ahead of us in terms of sophisticated technology.
Were there any negative aspects about living there?
Finding clothes that fit.
Yeah. They make you feel massive, don't they? I spent a few months in Bangkok.
I'm not even that big, you know, like I'm not a giant person by any means. I'm sort of a very, very average sized person in Canada, but I sure felt like a monster in Japan back then.
Yeah, I had that I lived in Thailand for a while in my 20s. I was working in Bangkok in a corporate job, but just over there for a few months. And exactly the same thing. They made me feel like a monster, you know, and I was probably a little bit curvier than I am now, but certainly like no more than a UK size 14, you know, which is very average in the UK. And there was just nothing, you know, absolutely nothing. Yeah. So how come you left? What happened?
Oh, so that, no, my I was with my boyfriend and he was working there and he ended up leaving that job. So we left.
You talk about drifting from one job to another and one boyfriend to another, rootless and passionless. I think that's something we can all relate to at some point, you know, particularly in your 20s and sometimes 30s as well. Also, you talk about some low times with depression and anxiety and mention at some point that things got very, very low financially and you ended up visiting a food bank.
Yeah, I mean, I was in a, you know, really, really terrible depression. I think I had three major depressions in my life earlier when I was younger. And it's very hard to function when you're in a depression. It's hard to keep all the balls in the air, you know, keep the income coming in and all of those things. And that's quite a long time ago. It's hard for me to even really remember those days. But I'm very glad that I found yoga and that I found, I also did a lot of therapy. I did a lot of gestalt therapy that helped me a lot. Found yoga, which I do every day. I do some form of yoga every day, whether it's breathing or meditating or something every day. And, you know, I found something that really impassioned me. I think those were the three things that, you know, that really helped me cope with, you know, the emotional problems I had when I was younger. And I don't know whether maybe I would have outgrown them. I'm not sure. I think sometimes when you're young, these problems are a lot worse than when you get older and more stable. But in any event, I sort of think of, you know, those as the three things that helped me recover and then just become a more stable, emotionally more stable person. Although financially, my gosh, it's never ending struggle when you're a creative. That's for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. Where were you when you visited the food bank? What situation were you in?
Well, this is what I'm saying. I'm actually trying to. It's kind of hard for me to remember. It was quite a long time ago.
Interesting, though. Do you think there's something about you know, not wanting to remember? I also noticed, I hope you don't mind me bringing it up, but only that I can relate. You said that your best friend died, and I lost two best friends, you know, in my 20s as well at the same time.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I think things like that really, I mean, I remember it. People always comment on my memory. I remember every single little bit about everything, almost like it's in a movie of those times. But you lost your best friend as well. And, you know, do you think there's something about trying not to remember? I hate to force you to remember it.
Well, no, I'm famous for not having a very good memory, actually.
Right, okay.
I get teased about it a lot by my friends. I've trained myself to focus on the future and to focus on the present, well, to focus on the present really more than anything else, and to think about the future rather than the past. And I don't think about the past very much. I try not to, actually. Because I like to be very much in the present, because, you know, that's what yoga trains you to do. You're breathing, there you go, breathing again, and just you're very much in the present. And then, you know, I really love to sort of plan for the future, like plan trips or plan things I want to write or places that, you know, I want to go with my career, things I want to accomplish. And that's kind of where I put my focus. And so maybe that's part of the reason. I don't know, but I do remember it, but I just don't remember all the circumstances.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, one could say actually it's totally pointless, you know, thinking about the past anyway, but it does shape you, doesn't it? A lot of people talk about the healing power of yoga, and I find it very difficult, actually, that sort of yoga relaxation breathing. So my sort of exercise poison is doing weights, you know, I love doing weights. But people talk about that healing power of yoga. And of course, going to India is a well-trodden path for that sort of the yoga healing experience.
Yeah. But I think that you know, if you have some preconceived ideas about what yoga is or what healing is, it can get in your way. And I think it's better to just let those preconceived ideas go and be just really open. There's a teacher I like very much who says yoga. Oh, what's that? What did he say? He always talks about yoga is about being with what is. That is yoga. That you're grounding into the reality of this moment. But in the Western world, we have an idea that yoga is supposed to get us somewhere specific, whether it's a better body, a yoga body, or whether it's a state of bliss, or whether it's put your, you know, leg behind your ear or whatever. And that's not true. That's a misinterpretation. That's a misunderstanding of yoga. And so a lot of people have rejected yoga because they think yoga is trying to get them to be perfect. And they don't understand that that's not the point of yoga at all. In fact, it's completely the opposite. It's about being very open to what is happening in this moment.
So accepting of the presence, you know, good and bad.
Well, put it this way. I'm not sure I'd use the word accepting. I think I'd use the word awareness. So just being aware. Okay, so I'm sitting here and I'm breathing. Okay, so what am I noticing about my breath? Well, my breath feels a little constricted, actually. So I'm sitting here noticing, okay, my breath is a bit constricted. Okay, so I just moved I sat up a little straighter. Okay,
yeah,
now I'm sitting up a bit
well.
Straighter. Okay, I'm sitting up a bit straighter. Now how is my breath? Oh, now I'm breathing a little better. And actually, well, I'm noticing that my chest is opening. Okay, so let me see if I can do that some more. Okay, I'm going to breathe and I'm going to open up my chest and let me see what that is like. Oh, okay, so that's actually very calming. I feel calmer. My shoulders are dropping. Well, that's very interesting. So it's moment by moment awareness.
I was doing it. I'd love to know however many people listen to that and start doing the same thing. Because as you were talking through it, I, you know, I'm sitting up, my shoulders are back, my more relaxed, I'm breathing better. Where have you on your travels? Where have you felt happiest? Where is your in a moment? Like describe to me in a moment on your travels.
Well, I think almost the happiest I've ever been in my life was on my first trip to India, or my first several trips to India, when I was very anonymous before I started, you know, blogging and becoming more known online. I used to love to just jump on a train, take a long train ride in India. And don't forget, when I came to India in 2005, it was the very beginning of the internet. There was no social media, no smartphones, nothing like that. And so I remember the feeling of standing in the doorway, because they keep the doors open, you know, for ventilation. It's probably not safe at all. Anyway, standing in the doorway and don't tell my family, standing in the doorway, hanging on so I don't fall out. But, you know, and the hot air flowing in and passing these, you know, very rustic scenes of rural India. And I'd be in the middle of nowhere and the train would be chugging along. And I realized nobody knows where I am. You know, I'm just free. I'm just out here having this amazing adventure. No one knows where I am and I'm free. And that's very hard to put into words what an incredible experience that was for me.
Yeah, I'm feeling it. The warm breeze, you know, the smell of India, the people, the sounds, you know, the golden light Absolutely.
I was just about to say the golden light. My God, you read my mind. If people haven't been to India, they may not know, especially Canadians. Like in Canada, it's such a northern country. The light is very bluish. It's kind of cold, even on a hot summer day. The light is still kind of bluish. But in India, I guess because it's closer to the equator, for whatever reason, the sun is very yellow and it casts this kind of golden patina on everything. And it's one of the reasons photography is so incredible here. You get these beautiful, rich scenes and bright clothes, and then you get this golden glow on everything. And it's almost impossible to take a bad photo of India.
It is a feast, absolute feast of the senses, you know, and we haven't even started on the food yet. Oh, my goodness. If somebody wanted to study yoga in India, where would you recommend? Is there somewhere? I always visualize it somewhere incredibly scenic, in a hilltop station with people wearing robes and sort of wafting around in silence for a while, being very peaceful. Is there anywhere like that? Is that what it's like?
I suppose you could probably find a place like that. I think as you know, the tourists boom and as the population increases, I think you have to go further and further, further up into the Himalaya to find those places, because where I live, Rishikesh, used to be like that probably maybe 50 years ago, but now it's a very busy tourist place, and it might be a good place to start. But if, you know, I think as you get more serious about yoga and spirituality, you might find Rishikesh quite commercial. But I think for beginners or people who've never been to India, it would be a good place to start. But, you know, people ask me all the time where to go. And it's like, it's impossible to tell some, it's impossible to be like a spiritual matchmaker. You know, it's just impossible. I couldn't possibly, you know, I can tell you some places that I like, and that I know I've been there and I think they're pretty good. But, you know, we all have to find our own teachers and our own, you know, our own path. So I just tell people, just come here, try, you know, meet people, look around and find the right place for you. Or the other thing is, you know, a personal, there's nothing like a personal connection. So either you have a yoga teacher already who says, oh yeah, I have a guru in India who I love, why don't you go and, you know, meet him? Or maybe you'll go to a teacher who has come to, you know, from India to give classes. And that's happened to me a couple of times in Canada, where I met Indian teachers in Canada, and I one or two of them that I really connected with. And then I ended up going to their ashrams or schools and studying with them. So I already had a personal connection. I think that's the best way. And I know a lot of people look on the internet. I think that's the worst way, but I guess it's better than nothing. But a personal connection, or coming to India and just wandering around and finding your teacher, I would say those are the two best ways.
Very brave, but exciting and exploratory to just get a flight to India and find out what happens when you get there. But I love it. How does this all contrast to your life in Toronto?
Well, I actually haven't been in Toronto in over 3 years, because I got stranded in India because of the pandemic. And then India had a flight ban for 2 years. And so there was only the special bubble flights, which were super expensive. And now the flight ban has been lifted, and for some reason the flight costs have gone through the roof. And I literally cannot afford to fly back to Canada. So I can't remember, you know, it's like years since I've been in Toronto, and I don't have a life there anymore. I have my siblings, you know, my family, but I don't really have a life there anymore at the moment.
Interesting, because previously you were sort of based, you had a foot in both places, didn't you, for a while?
I did, yeah, I did. And then I decided that I needed to be in India to build my business. I mean, I'm trying to build my India for Beginners custom tour business, and I need to be here. I need to find out what's going on over here, and I want to be at the airport when my travelers arrive in Delhi. There's many reasons why I need to be here to build this business.
What was life like during the pandemic? A 2-year travel ban must have, I would have felt very, very restricted by it. I mean, I did feel very restricted by our travel bans here. I really struggled with not being able to leave. And also not just about leaving or going somewhere, you know, random on a holiday, but actually for me and for you too. But for me, it was all about being separated from friends and family, and indeed people I love, but indeed places I love as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It was all of those things. It was, I mean, I think most of us probably had some kind of shocking, it was a shock to the, for me, for sure. It shocked every, I, maybe it's different for different people. I don't, I mean, I don't know. I think we all had a rough time and I think we were all in shock. But in my case, it did definitely affect every aspect of my life, my personal life, my career, my living situation. It had a very shocking effect. I mean, I was a professional traveler, travel blogger, building a business, all of these things, and everything just was decimated, and yeah, and then I was stranded here, in Rishikesh. So I'm very glad I was in Rishikesh because Rishikesh was never the initial lockdown in India was considered the most rigorous in the world, one of them, and it was very tough for the first couple of months, the whole country. But when things started to ease up, so from March till May or June, it was pretty rough. We were really in lockdown. But when things started to ease up, I think Rishikesh was probably one of the best places to be in the country because we were never in a red zone. We were never in a zone that had a lot of cases. So we always had a lot of freedom. We were in what was called a green zone. And so we had a lot of freedom. Like, maybe I couldn't travel around the country, but I could certainly travel around my region, my district, with no problems. And we have nature right on our doorstep. And so I think I was lucky in, it's a small town, but I was lucky in the sense that we had freedom here, whereas I know, I mean, like people living in a big city who might have been stuck in their high rise, that would have been awful.
So, where can we find you? Where's best to find you?
I'm pretty much on almost every platform. I'm called Breathe Dream Go. So I Breathe Dream Go on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. My blog is called breathedreamgo.com. That's my main platform. And then if anybody has any interest in coming to India, I'm really happy to help them. And my company is called India for Beginners. So the site is indiaforbeginners.com.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to ask you my last question now. My last question is always about music because I often find that music and travel go very much hand in hand. And obviously, you have a history of being a bit of a groupie by the sounds of it as well. If you had to choose one song that reminds you of a really memorable time and place of travel, what is that song and what is the memory?
Can I pick a soundtrack instead of a
Yeah,
song?
absolutely. Let's do it.
So, as a longtime Apple user, I had my iPod with me when I came to India. Now I use my iPhone, and I have a playlist for India, and I love the soundtrack to the music to the movie called Water. It was directed by Deepa Mehta, and my ex-boyfriend, actually, Michael Dana, he wrote the soundtrack to this Indian movie called Water. And I love the music to that. It's very evocative. It's very Indian. And I can't even tell you how many times I've been traveling around India on a train, in the marketplace, listening to the soundtrack of Water, this movie.
What happens in the movie?
Well, this is a movie that's it's a beautiful movie. It's really worth watching. It's a movie that was set in India in the 1930s, I believe. And it's all about it's like a home for widows, an ashram for widows in Varanasi. And it's the story of this child who has this marriage. It's a child. She's like literally a child. She's like 9 or something. And she has this marriage to this man who dies. I think like he dies the day of the wedding or something. And she ends up, she's just a little girl, but she has to go to this widow's ashram and live in this home for widows on the banks of the Ganga River in Varanasi. And it's quite an amazing story.
That sounds fantastic. I love it. Thank you so much for coming on the Big Travel Podcast. And absolutely, the next time I'm in India, I will definitely be looking you up.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been so much fun talking about all of this.
Thank you so much for listening to the Big Travel Podcast. We're back every 2 weeks with a brand new episode. So see you then.